Welcome back to Game Time. I'm your host and your coaching teammate, Shauna Griffiths. I am grateful to have you here with me for today's conversation with an impactful leader, my friend, Chris Basami. If you're new to the show, know that every episode is designed to help you take your leadership game to the next level. Because I see that leadership is actually a sport and that each of us can choose a mindset and the way that I talk about as the way of the leadership athlete. And Chris is definitely a leadership athlete, as you will hear today as we're talking. So, you know, you can choose, I can choose these things that are seen in high performing athletes that again make up this way of the leadership athlete. And so we're going to jump right into Chris because Chris is actually a former professional baseball player. Who obviously then can speak from his own personal experience connecting sport and leadership. Chris is an inspirational keynote speaker. He is the founder of the Basami Training Institute, just Basami Training, I think it is. And so you're also a member of the POST, which is where we met, which I'll get into that. And I have drafted Chris as a part of the 2025 Leadership Athlete Draft Class. So Chris, thank you so much for joining me and allowing me to introduce you to my audience.
I'm so glad to be here. It's, you know, we'll get into it, but the way we met and how quickly we decided to hop on a call.
Yeah.
And then actually meet each other in person. It seems like a long time coming, but it was really, you know, we do things quickly, and I very much appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll actually get right to that. So when we are both members of the POST, which is a network for former athletes. As I mentioned, Chris is a far more higher performing athlete than me playing in the MLB, which we'll talk about. But we met and it was literally like this magnet. Like I swear if you could have heard a sound to it, it would have been like, whoop, like coming together. We saw each other, started talking right away. Your focus and your being present for me in a room full of people where we didn't have any context for why we were meeting. And then quickly aligned on, I think, energy. Our energy was similar, mindset, which I think is a bit of us both being former athletes, but there was something else. And it quickly led me to talk about and you to talk about some health conditions that I've actually never spoken about with in my audience because I just didn't really feel like I had a reason to. But so folks, I have had a thyroid condition, Hashimoto's is what it's called. And then when I had COVID, it left me with another, I guess my immunologist refers to it as a scar on my immune system. And so within moments, I was sharing these things and you were sharing, you are a cancer warrior, your own thyroid issues. And I mean, I'm talking within a few minutes. So it was a deep connection. And so again, it just makes me so grateful that we're in each other's journeys.
I agree. When health stuff is hard because you are on your own journey. At the same time, people, they want to give you advice. They want to give you support. They want to give you the glasses half full conversation. Oh, my friend had it. Oh, you'll be fine. And it's really a matter of just coming from a deep place of empathy and just a place of saying, I'm sorry you have to go through this. There's a lot of times where that is the best thing that someone can say. I'm sorry you have to go through this. Because even though there's a lot of stuff that we've gone through health-wise, there are things that other people have gone through that I have no clue what it means to walk in those shoes. But if struggle is what binds us, then I'm happy to empathize with you.
Yeah, it's so true. And I think sometimes that will cause me to not speak up about these chronic conditions that I have that are immune system related. And because one thing is, if I say it out loud, someone may look at me and say, well, you don't look sick, or it's, you know, that exterior that's a bit invisible, and it can make it challenging, at least for me, to talk about it. And the other thing is not wanting to seem like, to your point, I'm not seeking sympathy from people. It's sort of that this is what I deal with. But it really is, as you're saying it, it is something that, or as you're saying earlier, actually, about the reality. This is a reality of something that I walk through life in, but it is something that I don't necessarily usually bring up in conversation.
The reality of the situation is when I first got diagnosed with thyroid cancer and was going through it and going through the first year of surgeries and treatments and trying to find the right cocktail of meds, I was the token victim. I sat around and waited for doctors and science and medicine to do their job, and none of it worked. And the problem is that I fell deeper and deeper into a hole than I ever should have been in the first place. And the hard part about that is I was living a life of hypocrisy, because here I am, Vasami training. I train baseball and softball players. So we're talking about how to get ahead in the count, how to get ahead in your career, how to understand what you're in control of, you know, trust the process, not the results. And I'm living a life of hypocrisy because I'm doing none of that on my end in my health journey. And then I wonder why I'm depressed and I'm anxious and I'm sitting on the couch with a pint of ice cream in between my legs, crying at a commercial when I wasn't doing anything to even give myself a chance. And so it quickly became an understanding that here's the reality. So now it's no longer my responsibility to understand why this is happening to me. It is now my responsibility to understand how I respond and prepare for what's going to happen to me.
Great shifting of focus. And I really appreciate you sharing the bit about the way you were showing up every day in the work to be able to train those athletes and, you know, people. And then that dichotomy, you were doing that, but then this is how you were actually showing up for yourself. And I know you and I both feel that if we are going to be able to lead others, we need to lead ourselves first.
Mm-hmm.
And the challenge when you're showing up differently for others than you're showing up for yourself is such a, God, it is such a conundrum. It is it's like you're living on camera one way and you're living off camera another. It's mind blowing. And I think sometimes though you keep it up for so long until you kind of just get sick of it. You can no longer take it, you know,
right.
But you're right, is as if you shift your perspective and then this is the reality. And what am I going to do about it? Which I know you talk about, which is, I think I wrote it down because I wanted to make sure I said it right.
Mm-hmm.
Decisive action,
mm-hmm.
right? So talk to us about that.
Decisive action is living in facts and living with those facts and being able to understand those facts where you've taken a step back and looked at it from a bird's eye view and say, hey, okay, this is what I'm in control of. This is what's important. Where those two things intersect, that's my focus. And having the ability to take inventory, personal inventory, about not just tangible things, but also the intangible parts of our life as well, that allows me to make decisive action on the things that are important to me and the things I can control. And then going back to what you said before about how to show up every day and be able to deal with those non-negotiables. And a lot of times I tell people when I speak or when I coach, your non-negotiables should be so binding that no one gets in the way of you accomplishing those things. And so, you know, when I first set on this journey to get back into control of my life, owning my life instead of renting my life, victim to victor, 7 days a week, I'm working out. I'm doing something because I know what that does for me to set me up for that day, for my clients, for my family, for my daughters. And so it doesn't matter where I am, that system is in place. And so there's a lot of people that when they get ready for a business trip or they go away on a leisure trip, it's what am I going to wear and where are we going to eat and where are we going to go? And for me, I'm searching the new gym if the hotel doesn't have one already, because these things are going to get done. And so, you know, when I go to St. Martin with my family, we go every year. That's where my wife and I got married. I'm on vacation part of the time, but the other part of the time, it's just Tuesday. It's just Thursday. It's just Friday. And these things have to get done. I just happen to be doing them in a much more beautiful place.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so I like the way you spoke about that because these are part of the discipline of your life. This is how you, it's a practice, a way of living. A lot of times people speak about getting that exercise in for the endorphins or they're trying to reach a fitness goal. And yes, those are things that are benefits. And so much for me in these ways of living and the ways of practicing are about what does that actually do for me mentally to set me up? It creates that order, that organization. So that's the way that I'm conducting myself. So then I think it ends up for me like quieting noise. So you're right. There are certain elements. If I'm on vacation, I have some elements of that are fundamental to me. So I don't lose connection with my own core.
Mm-hmm.
I think is what it comes from for me, because that's when I feel untethered and lost.
And that's a perfect way to say it, untethered, because we live in an end world, not an or world. And so what I mean by that is we can do two things at once. Two things can work both ways. So the thing that helps us positively can also hurt us negatively. And I've been talking to people about that lately in terms of tethering, because so much of our day is developed within those first 5 or 10 moments of waking up. And so if I wake up and the first thing is, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm overwhelmed. I can't believe I have to do this today. I can't believe my daughters have a 2-hour delay. Can't believe how bad I ate last night. These negative thoughts that are, you've already thought about all this stuff before you even left the bedroom. So now we're sitting there and we're tethered to those thoughts the rest of the day. And I promise you, if you wrote down all the stuff that came out of your mouth or your head the rest of the day, probably more negatively skewed. So tethering works both ways. And that's why I tell people, like, if you're building this personal operating system at home, in the soft moments, when there's no crisis, that becomes who you are. That becomes a part of you. And that comes with you wherever you are. And then when crisis does hit, you're so much more prepared for it. When it's time to pivot, you're so much more prepared for it. We don't get derailed and we don't get so overwhelmed by even the smallest stuff. Like, it's going to take something monumental to have to derail us in those moments. And that all stems from the core work that you've done leading up to those moments.
And when we think about that connection to sport, as you're saying it, I'm thinking about that connection to the fundamentals. So when you're not so knocked off your feet, so to say, if you know, I think baseball or softball terms, literally as your feet set, do you have that foundation set? Mm-hmm. But if you don't have those fundamentals, then anything that hits you comes at you during the day. If you're not set in your foundation in your feet, you're going to get knocked off more easily. Again, I think these are to your point about those first 10 minutes of the day. I think it's a great thing to point out, because this in up your discipline concept is not necessarily, it doesn't begin when you get into the gym or on the bike, or it begins with, again, when you wake up, what are you thinking in those first moments? What are you telling yourself? What is the action that you're taking? And when I say I've been upping my discipline recently, yes, it means that I'm really working now that I'm on the East Coast is to get that ride in first thing in the morning, but it's also turning around, making the bed, doing the things that are set the foundation in the morning so that limit the amount of choices I have to be making that can, to your point, derail me from where I need to go that day.
I call it being brilliant at the basics.
That's great.
And I talk about it with my athletes. I talk about it with my performance clients. I talk about it when I'm on stage doing a keynote. Like, are you brilliant at the basics? And it's interesting you bring up making the bed, because when I go and I talk to high school students and high school student athletes and especially college student athletes, a lot of times the first question I'll ask before I even get started is, raise your hand if you made your bed this morning. Maybe half the kids raise their hand. And so the ones who are raising their hand look at the ones who aren't, and the ones who aren't look at the ones who are raising their hand. They're like, why didn't I make my bed? And the reason why, and I say, okay, we'll come back to that. And the reason why I use that as a prompt and as a question is because later on, when I get into conversations about accountability and showing up for yourself and showing up for your teammates and those big moments that we've worked for, well, guess what? When we've got 10 seconds left in the game and you got the ball in your hand and it's the bottom of the ninth and I'm up at bat with bases loaded, or you're on the mound, or or it's your penalty shot, whatever it is, if I know that you can't even make your bed in the morning, I don't know if I'm going to trust you as much in that situation.
Yeah.
But if I do know that you're brilliant at the basics, you do all the small stuff because you have the mindset that everything matters and everything accumulates on itself throughout the day, and it gets to the point where these things have are just they become mindless because you've done them so often. Well, yeah, man, I'm going to pass you the ball with 10 seconds left.
Right. And I think part of that is because when you're doing those things, when you are brilliant at the basics, that actually helps your confidence level. Mm-hmm. You feel better about yourself. That's what you're exuding. Other people can feel that in your energy and the way you show up. It's actually interesting. I think this element of, did you make your bed? Are you, you know, good at these brilliant at the basics? I think there are things that you can pretty much see about people, or you can tell right away. Again, I think it's a reflection of their confidence, their ease mm-hmm. with themselves, as opposed to feeling a bit scattered, which it has something to do with focus, which I was thinking about preparing for this. So I'll tell you a little bit of a story. So I played softball. The worst I was at any sport was probably softball mm-hmm. that I sincerely tried to play. So I played in high school, I think my sophomore and junior year. I was terrible at batting. I never practiced batting. Okay, clearly the two are linked. The other thing, though, is that I didn't know where to focus. I was thinking about it this morning. I was like, why was I so bad? I didn't know where to focus my eyes. I didn't know the fundamental. I didn't know how to stand. I tend to, as an athlete, or I think probably just in life, I'm a pretty good mimic. So if I see someone else doing mm-hmm. it, I'm mimicking it. But I was really thinking about it because I didn't do the fundamentals. I didn't learn those. I just started playing my sophomore year and thought I could just mimic other people. And I would step up to bat and I had no idea what I was supposed to be looking at, where mm-hmm. I was supposed to be focusing. So the translation or the tangent to work is, it to me, it's so obvious, right? But I think when we're talking about this episode is about achieving personal greatness or mm-hmm. pursuing a personal greatness. Mm-hmm. It's that I wasn't doing anything in that example to actually set myself, and I wondered why I got hit by the pitch more than I hit the ball. But I was just really curious about your thoughts about that, and if you felt that similarity, that element of focus and the fundamentals, you know, how that comes up for you when you're working with people.
One of the things that's interesting about working with people is I think the resistance to doing something different than they've done before. I've been doing it this way. I'm not getting the results that I necessarily want. And when you introduce, hey, what if we tried it this way? What if you thought about it this way? What if you just went and practiced without having the pressure of the performance? And that could be in anything. That could be in any walk of life. You know, people who struggle when they're up at bat, people who struggle in communication, people who struggle with presentations, it all comes back to practicing. It all comes back to putting yourself in that situation as often as you possibly can. And then I think it comes back to, we are, you know, as in this society right now, we always want the next exciting thing. And so I think there's times where we don't allow ourselves to just be okay with the same boring meals 5 out of 7 days. And the reason why I say this is because I pretty much eat the same thing, you know, Monday through Friday, because it tastes good to me, but it's also very easy for me to repeat. And if I can repeat it and I know it's successful, that sounds like a pretty good combination to me. But it's when after 2 days, you're like, oh, I can't eat this. Like, let me go try this really fun, fancy recipe that I just found on Instagram. But just in that. Because like you said before, now it's another choice. Now I have to go to the store and buy the thing that I didn't have for this recipe. And then, oh my gosh, you know, it made more than I thought it was going to. And now I feel like I have to eat it. The snowball effect of that becomes pretty overwhelming. And so because I did that, and because I think in my life, oh, well, 2 days is pretty consistent. Not the third day I can kind of fall off a little bit. It's allowing yourself to understand what putting together 6 out of 7 days, 4 weeks in a month, in a season to 6 months to a year? Like, what does that actually look like? Do you actually give yourself a chance to do that? And I think that's where a lot of people fall off, is because they think fundamentals are going to be locked in within 2 to 3 days. Whereas it's taken way longer to do that. And I mean, even for myself, you know, there's times where I know that I'm kind of getting off track with my nutrition and I start to feel it, and maybe I'm not sleeping as well, or I feel a bit more sluggish. Like, so I go back to tracking because I know it works, and it's accountability right in my face.
Right. And when it goes back to what you were saying about people's lack of willingness to change, even if they're, what they're doing isn't working, there's often a resistance to do something differently. This is why I talk about a lot of time, there's awareness that something is off or not quite where you want it to be. Then there's a willingness to do something about it. And then separately, there's the actual action that you take and you
execution,
that action. Those are three completely separate things. And I think that's part of the recipe of people falling off the horse, or, you know, what you were saying earlier, is because it takes repetition of these things. That's why I say practice the way we're practice living. It's not that you do it, just someone like you who has a specific way of eating, someone like, I eat the same thing for breakfast, lunch, and snack as well. And my dinner rotation is very slim. Some people think it's boring. I say, I don't really have to think much about it. And so we have these ways of operating so that we can, it kind of dials down the distraction of things. If we can keep some of these things consistent and keep doing them, and we're following that, is something working or not? Am I willing to make a change? And then what action am I taking repeatedly? I can't stress that enough. Repeatedly is the thing.
Well, and that's why I always bring it back to, if people have a job, let's talk about what your job is like throughout the week. Every Monday you have a group call. Every Tuesday you're doing outreach. Every Wednesday you're sitting down, you have a meeting at 1 o'clock. Like, these things are set in your professional life, but yet you're so resistant to have set things in your personal life. And in that professional life, you've gotten to a certain place, or your company's gotten to a certain place with these systems put in place. So they're going to work in your personal life. You're just not used to having to put in that work in your personal life because you just stepped into that role in the professional world. And it was no different than, you know, we run, here's the offense we run, you know. And as long as you're a shooting guard, you're going to run this offense, and you're going to go around here, and you're going to hit this spot, and you're going to get this pick, and you're going to come off that pick. Like, same thing in baseball, you know, like the beautiful thing about baseball and a lot of sports as you get is just constantly looking at the fact that it's really the same situations over and over and over again. The people that succeed are the ones who, A, have awareness of the situation, and then taking action. If I failed 10 times, how am I going to approach this situation differently? And so it's being able just to give that perspective to people to say, hey, I mean, life's messy. It's not perfect. So the best thing you can do is give yourself grace and opportunity to understand that it is a practice to be able to go after things that you say you want. And once you start to feel that resistance, like, it's okay to lean into it.
There's something so wonderful about when you speak and when you're delivering your message, Chris, that comes across to me where it's just fact what you're saying. Like, well, are you going to do something about it or not? There's no, like, well, no, know if I want to. As you're describing that, I'm like, shit, go do the thing. So folks, who are listening, I was texting Chris the other day about something. I can't remember about the specific of it, but your response to me in that moment was like, great, that's a great realization. Now, what are you going to do about it? And it left no room for me to eke out of it. Or if I did try to eke out of it, then my reply to you was going to be right in my face, and it would have been me saying like, no, I'm not willing to do that. And so it really is, I think, important. I'm saying it out loud here because, one, it's a compliment, and I appreciate it in our interactions. I find it wonderful. And to share with the audience that there is a way that you can speak to yourself, or mm-hmm. you could have a coach like Chris, who is part of your journey at eliminating those elements of where you don't show up for yourself. Or if you do, again, you see it and you actually hold yourself accountable, because then you say, okay, well, if I continue this, then again, I'm not going to show up for myself the way I need to show up for others. So I think that my point is how we show up, or are we hiding? I think your very direct way is an example for others that we can actually speak to ourselves that way as well.
A lot of times I like to prompt people by saying, give me motion before emotion. And the reason why I say that is because as human beings, we're very quick to go negative. We're very quick to not do it because I remember what that felt like. I remember the pain. I remember that was uncomfortable. So there's so many times where I don't actually ever get into motion because my emotions are holding me back. And so give me the motion first. And again, I'm not saying your feelings aren't valid. We're all, our feelings are valid. The triggers are valid, you know, but having the ability to work through it, number one, and number two, being able to, one of the things that helps us understand if we're balanced, if we're regulated, where are we from a mental perspective, from a mental space, is when we get triggered, how quickly can we get back to regulation? And so a lot of times that motion is what gets us back to regulation. Mm. That thought process, you know, maybe we start the habit stack. Maybe we say, hey, you know what? Every time I get overwhelmed, I'm gonna go for a 10-minute walk. And one of two things is gonna happen. You're either gonna fall in love with walking and you'll keep walking longer, or you'll realize, you know what? I actually have stuff to do. That wasn't even that big a deal. And you'll start to kind of brush some of these things off. But emotion is what holds us back a lot of the time. And going back to what you said before, are you even aware of that in the first place? You know, can you name it? And if I can name it, then I can do something about it. And then I'm able to sit down and say, was this worth my time? Was this worth my energy? And we can then talk about that stuff. But I'd rather talk about it. I'd rather talk about how much you hated the workout after we've done the workout.
Yes.
Instead of psyching yourself out before the workout even started.
It's so true, because who knows what that workout would actually be. Again, we sort of are foreshadowing what this experience is going to be, which only, to your point, gets in the way more. I talk about, we literally get in our own way so much of the time. And I was actually curious what your thoughts were about what does block greatness. And I think you have, sounds like you've identified similar how, when I say, is we get in our own way by the things that you're saying. First mm-hmm. of all, it's what we're thinking, what we're telling ourselves, what we're, to your point, psyching ourselves out before we even do it. So I love that element of hacking. I think you called it habit stacking.
Habit stacking, yeah.
Habit stacking. Because again, it has to be these things that allow us to shift our brains and get out of our own way.
There's a lot of times where fear and doubt are valid. But a lot of times that also comes from the fact that we're just unprepared. You know, I always like to say that pressure is really for the unprepared. If you've done what you're supposed to up until that moment, there should be no pressure. Especially as athletes. Mm. I mean, you're either going to succeed or you're going to learn. And yes, it might look like a failure at the time. You know, I missed a game-winning shot. I struck out with the bases loaded. I, you know, gave up the game-winning home run. In the moment, it feels like a failure. But really, it's a learning opportunity. But in that moment, I should feel no pressure. Because if I'm prepared, then I'm ready. And if I go about it the way that I have practiced and prepared, then we'll see what happens. But so much of the time, people walk up and they're feeling nervous and they feel pressure and they feel doubt because they just haven't put the time in to prepare for that moment. And that starts with, and here comes guilt and shame and regret before things even happen.
Yes. I'm so glad you went there. It is stacks. It's the fear. Then by not doing it, then you start to feel guilty, even mm-hmm. shameful, those elements. And you've, in your brain, in your heart, in your gut, you've had this whole experience before you've even done anything.
Exactly.
And I'm saying this because a lot of the consulting work I do is actually working with people who are pitching for new business.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens so often where people haven't done the preparation before they go into that room and they want to win in that room, but they've not done the preparation. So they're scared out of their mind. They're psyched out. And just like anything, you don't go up to bat and imagine yourself striking out. You go up to bat and you literally visualize yourself hitting whatever the, you know, you want it, the outcome to be.
Mm-hmm.
But again, in business, it's such a great way to look at that and say, oh, right. I wouldn't step up to the free throw line and say, oh, shit, I'm going to miss this shot. Nope.
Mm-hmm.
So don't do that in business. You're going to go in, practice, prepare, imagine yourself, literally visualize yourself killing that pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And the parallels for me are so obvious and so relatable.
And I think I was working with a leadership group a couple of weeks ago in a corporate setting. And I always do a Q&A when I'm done, because I feel like that's where people are willing to be open and vulnerable after I've given my talk, where I'm open and vulnerable and we talk about strengths and flaws and all that stuff. And one of the women said to me, she goes, how do you deal with that self-doubt? Whereas you want to be more of the team, you want more responsibility, but maybe you're not feeling valued, maybe you're not feeling honored or anything like that. And it's just amazing how we can always draw back to sport. Mm-hmm. And I always think about it. When I was playing and I was in high school, I was an All-American, I batted third or fourth. When I was in college, I was All-Conference, batted third or fourth. And then you get to the pros, and sometimes I was batting ninth. And it was not something I was used to doing. And it wasn't until somebody looked at me and said, are you in the damn lineup? And I was like, yeah. He goes, then who cares where you're batting? Because as long as you're in the lineup, you have an opportunity to produce. You have an opportunity to help the team. You have an opportunity to show what you're capable of doing. And so that was my response to this woman. I said, question, would you rather be on this team in the role that you're in right now, or would you rather be locked out of this building tomorrow when you showed up for work tomorrow? And she's like, well, that's an obvious answer. I said, of course it is. I said, but we just don't get to think about those things that way. We're not prompted to think about those things in those ways. So that's where I find, you know, the beauty of us living through sport, learning through sport, is that we can bring it into the real world and help people, you know, especially a lot of these businesses that look at it now like we're part of a team, this is a family, and help them recognize the beauty in trying to find that singular uniqueness while also being a part of a team.
Such a great point. And I love that when you talked about that, it actually showed me the simplicity there. And I think oftentimes in business and in life, we'll overcomplicate something, and just as much as psyching ourselves out. And so to your point, being able to ask or drill it down to this, would you rather be here or not? Would you rather not be able to open up that door? And it, again, it simplified it to her. It reduced the noise, and hopefully that she was able to shift her perspective and make a new decision.
The thing too, you know, obviously you're big in leadership. I think the problem too is that we always want the title of leadership to tell us that we can be leaders. And I look at it the opposite. I want you to feel compelled to lead without the title. And by doing that, by showing up and having the integrity and the character and the work ethic and the ambition of a leader without the title, organically you will show everybody why you are a leader.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then at some point, hopefully somebody recognizes it, that maybe they give you the title. But that should, whether you have the title or not, shouldn't define you wanting to be that leader in all aspects of your life, in or out of the office, with your family or without your family, in your community, out of the community.
And it starts with leading yourself. Before you can lead other people, it starts with leading yourself. And it's not just do it once. It's that, again, we've talked about this. It's the practicing. It's the continuously doing it. That's when you're actually showing up, call it on screen, in a way that complements the way you're doing it for yourself. And then to your point, that's when it becomes evident I think, to other people. At the very least, it'll be like, oh, well, that person feels awfully confident in the way they're leading themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd love for you to talk a little more about it, if you can, while I still have you, is about your background as a baseball player. And then when you were playing, were you thinking about these things, or did that not come until after you were done playing and then you went on to your career?
I was always a leader. I was always very independent. I'm one of four. Mm. My older brother's 6.5 years older than me. So I grew up playing with him and his friends. And I can remember being 6 years old in the backyard playing against, you know, 12 and 13 year olds, losing by one run in the bottom of the ninth on a walk-off home run. And they're all cheering and I'm all pissed off. And my mom's like, you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. And that's just kind of where it started, because and then at the same time, I have a younger brother and a younger sister. So I joke with people all the time that I'm a true second child, which is why I have tattoos and I own my own business. And so being able to come up in that respect, and just, I did. My dad instilled in me very quickly, you know, to fall in love with the process and how important practice was, and you know, be different in the way that you go about stuff. And that's kind of how it was. I always was on a different journey because I just wanted some big things. And so always felt like a leader in high school, and then went to college, started at Notre Dame, and then ended up transferring to Elon University. Was the captain of Elon baseball, you know, my senior year. Ended up getting drafted, playing about 6 years between the Rockies and then a couple independent teams. And to answer your question, no, nothing was really conscious. I would journal. I would do things like that, you know, trying to figure out visualization, trying to figure out what went wrong. How do I approach it differently tomorrow? But a lot of this other stuff really wasn't until I got done with football, in learning how to deal with the tangible stuff and be able to work on yourself every single day and being able to give yourself grace. And I think, you know, I did a workshop for the Post back in January. And that's one of the things we talked about, was as we are growing up, getting to the elite levels of sport that we got to, there's also an organic ego that grows. And what I mean by that is we accomplish things, sometimes never even realizing how we accomplished it. So here we are later in life, where life has changed, things have changed, health, work, family, spouse, gained 60 pounds, you know, for myself over the time, lost 60 pounds. So for people that they've kind of lost their way, especially in sport, their initial inclination is, I should be able to do this because I was an elite athlete. I should be able to do this because I made it to the pros. I should be able to do this. And it can be as little as having enough awareness and willingness and willpower to sit there and go, I'm trying to lose weight. I can't eat that Reese's peanut butter cup. And so then it's like, well, I should just be able to do that. I mean, I was an elite athlete. No, like, you were an elite athlete. What did you learn from that? Okay. And so now it's a matter of repurposing those skills into our everyday life now. It would be a waste if you went through all that and didn't learn anything from it. And so now it's a matter of imparting all that wisdom and all that experience into these new challenges that we have. And so, yeah, as simple as it might seem, if you are trying to lose weight because you've put on weight since you got done with your playing days and you didn't eat that Reese's peanut butter cup, that shit needs to be celebrated.
Yeah, it's so true. I love that you said that. It really is. If you are able to make that shift and you don't do the thing, then celebrate it. I love that.
Yes, that needs to be celebrated.
But it is really true.
So that way, the next day when you don't do it, it'll be celebrated again. And so now there's a whole nother reinforcement and whole new neurological pathway that's being built. No different than we were put through so much hard when we were playing sport by coaches, by our teams, by the environments that we were in. And now you're done with that environment. So my question to you or anybody listening is, how do you choose hard every day now? How do you mentally, spiritually, emotionally, physically put yourself through hard every day?
Yeah. And have a moment of celebration when you actually do it.
Exactly.
I'm clearly fixating on that. I'm going to be celebrating. I'm going to be high-fiving myself, folks.
Hell yeah. Have yourself a pom-pom. Get one. Because again, we were given so much hard. And so we built up this natural resiliency in those environments at a younger age but we didn't know how we did it in the first place. So now here we are needing resiliency, but I haven't done it in 10 years. So now it's a matter of how do you build up the resiliency again? Well, that's by choosing hard and then accomplishing hard and then understanding that the next time that you're presented with an obstacle, because you've chosen hard for 57 straight days up to that moment, the obstacle is not the issue because there is no quit now. And you accomplish it and you celebrate. And like that's how the foundation gets built again.
And I said earlier, you're a cancer warrior. Mm-hmm. You've got thyroid, you know, I believe hypothyroidism.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot to have to be resilient through. And so did part of you, your lived experience that made this so sharp for you, was it those experiences as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. Because I was going through so much, but approaching it so wrong. And so I joke all the time. There's a lot of days where I literally have to convince myself to get out of bed. There's very few days I'm waking up screaming, oh, what a beautiful morning. There's so many mornings where I come down and I'm basically negotiating with myself to put my shoes on. But I've also developed a routine that I get excited about. And that's a big help. So I get excited to wake up at 4:15, 4:30. Again, because this works for me. I get excited to wake up, come downstairs, drink my pre-workout, read the Bible, read my Daily Stoic, read another reflection, read 10 pages of a book that I'm excited about while my pre-workout sets in. And then I'm excited to go to the gym. I'm excited to see what I can do that day. And that's a pretty full morning by the time my daughters wake up and now it's time for me to be dad. And then I drop the girls off and now it's time for me to be speaker. It's time for me to be mentor. It's time for me to be coach. It's time for me to be friend. It's time for me to be husband. Like, it's a matter of building a routine that you get excited for, that it doesn't seem like it's such a chore to do.
Mm.
And it's in those moments that I felt like, yes, I've been presented with obstacles, but I feel way more prepared now than ever because of the things I've gone through, because I take inventory as often as I can, because I've truly understood what my non-negotiables are. And I've been blessed enough to understand how to vet the people in my life so that the people in my life are not just constantly building me up, but also having real enough conversations with me to sit there and be like, I don't think your actions and what you say are aligned right now. Being able to have the perspective that unless you are literally in the middle of a storm, every day is a pretty sunny day. Yeah. And then also at the same time, understanding that we're really put on this earth for moments like this. Human interaction, human connection, the ability to understand that if you can live by the creed that you are willing to plant trees, knowing you'll never sit in their shade, you will start to live a very fulfilled life.
Beautiful.
Because it's about impact on our fellow people and living unconditionally in a conditional world. Finding as many interactions throughout the day, even in the mundane transactions. And I truly believe that if that's how we go about it, you're going to be pretty happy with who you are.
I feel impacted. Folks who are listening, I'm sure you feel impacted too. Now, it really is true. And part of how I look at that is that allows me to not walk a hollow life. Like that is what I say, is that I am working to leave meaningful footprints. And it's not that I'm keeping score. It's just the way that I want to be showing up for others, but I have to show up for myself first. And when I'm not, I know it because the habits start to change and I start to feel those feelings of sometimes not even wanting to look at myself in the mirror, you know, and again, those feelings of guilt or shame and those type of things. And I'm like, oh God. And again, if I'm looking in the mirror, I have one and pointing, you know, it's like, I have to answer to that. And so that's a way that I can hold myself accountable. I don't want to keep feeling that way. So what am I then, to your point, what am I going to do? What are those non-negotiables? And, mm-hmm. you know, I love when you're speaking, I love this about you is that it's no bullshit. It just is what it is. You're going to move this forward and it's up to you. And so really, you know, I think it's a really great gift. What you've shared today is so much of the how. So folks who've been listening, like I'm telling you, go back, rewind. re-listen to this. You gave so many hows for how to show that through your own experience that, you know, people can really learn from, I think, and start to adopt. So I can't thank you enough. And before I let you go, like I kind of breezed over what you do. And so I want to make sure that we leave people who are listening, if they've been impacted by you, like I have been through this conversation, like who are you working with and for, and how can they be like, I got to get Chris in here to talk to my people or to work with my people?
So my biggest thing is to help empower people and cultures, teams, organizations. So I speak, and it's interesting because a lot of times people say like, well, what's your niche? And they don't like to hear this, but I say, my niche is people. Because I talk to people about life and how to approach life and how to get the most out of this life. So I talk to associations. I talk to corporations. I speak with at conferences. And then to students and student athletes. I've been blessed to be able to talk to a very diverse number of audiences, all while hopefully leaving them. And I've gotten enough people a response that people leave empowered and inspired to think about their life and approach their life and take decisive action in a different way than they've ever really thought about before. So if you're looking to work on mental health and personal development and personal greatness and be able to dig differently and invigorate the people at your culture, I would love the opportunity to come in and speak. So that's my speaking business. I also have Vasami Method, which is my performance lifestyle coaching business. And then my baby that I started when I was 19 years old is Vasami Training, where I get to work one-on-one with young athletes all the way from 7 all the way through college and pro in a holistic way to help them achieve their goals from a baseball and softball standpoint.
I swear, I just feel this way. I feel like we were meant to know each other. Mm-hmm. It is a joy and an honor to walk this earth with you as part of my journey. And thank you for impacting me. Thank you for impacting this audience today. And I look so forward to continuing to support each other and can't wait to drop.
Same. I appreciate you. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you so much. Everybody have an awesome day. Thank you.